It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Before we go any further, we have to mention Charlie Bird again. I know you've been hearing about him all weekend, but I just have to put in my tuppence halfpenny. What an amazing achievement. And so emotional. All the images and all the videos. And Claire on Morning Ireland This Morning, his wife, and Charlie's words on Morning Ireland This Morning. And they've raised over 2 million for Pieta House and Motor Neuron Association of Ireland, which is phenomenal, phenomenal. And hats off to everybody involved. And it was just a glorious outpouring of generosity on Saturday. So well done to everybody. Sad news about Joan Brown. You would have heard it on the news at one. June Brown played Doc Cotton in EastEnders. And she died over the weekend at 95. 95. That's a great age. She appeared in 2,884 episodes of EastEnders. The BBC are quoted as saying, June created one of the most iconic characters in Doc Cotton, not just in soap, but in British television. We send all our love and deepest sympathies to June's family and friends. A very bright light has gone out at EastEnders today, but we shall be raising a sweet sherry in June's memory. Rest in peace, our dearest June. You will never be forgotten. 2,884 episodes. I know our own Pauline McLynn would have acted alongside her in EastEnders for a couple of months there a few years ago. And of course, Dot was her character, and she was the smoking and sort of, you know, a dry wit. But June was a very funny woman. So we got out a clip of June at her best in conversation with Graham Norton. And also on the couch that night was Lady Gaga. So June Brown, Lady Gaga and Graham Norton.
Now, June Brown.
Oh, I'm exhausted already.
But here's the thing. Yes. Now, are you familiar, Lady Gaga, with the EastEnders?
No, don't say yes, darling. If you're not, you're not, and I don't blame you.
I am. And yes. I actually am a very big fan of yours. Aww. I just don't watch a lot of television.
No, I don't watch any.
Yeah. She started just after EastEnders began in 1985. She had a break between 1993 and 1997, but apart from that, she was a regular 2,884 episodes. May she rest in peace. Now, last night was census night, and loads of commentary on Twitter about what people were putting in the time capsule, and people were confused, as we thought, because it's like that, write an essay on anything and the head explodes then, doesn't it? Whereas if you're told to write a specific thing, you can do it. Karen Mulreid was confused. She says, I'm mortified, but I don't understand the time capsule and the census. Am I supposed to write, there's a war in Ukraine and COVID is rampant and here's the news of the day? Or is it supposed to be the child lost 2 teeth this week and we're getting the patio done? I don't know the answer, Karen Mulreid. And then Barbara Scully says that we're listening our animals because they live here too. Nice one. And then somebody else says, filling in the census time capsule section, wondering what major event would appear on Reeling in the Years 2022. Well, let's see, they'll know about that. They'll know about that. It's the other stuff. And Panty Bliss, Rory O'Neill says, in our census time capsule section, I wrote about Ireland 2022 being a great place to be queer, to be a queer couple, but that I see a worrying slide backwards in many other places, including our nearest neighbour. So I really hope it's a happy queer reading my time capsule in 21-22. And then there was other ones there. Keith says, been with himself almost 15 years, living together, coming up on 14 years and own a house together the last 4 years. But according to the census, we're classed as single people. And then Margaret Leahy, who we had on the programme, this is sort of poignant. In the year I was born, the census counted me and 9 others. 10 years later, I was one of 13. In student days, I was one of 8. I missed 2 while living in America. Back home, I was one of 6, then one of 3. And tonight, for the first time, I am one. One of one, Margaret Leahy. And people used the time capsule to make really strong statements, and the Irish Times have a collection of some of them there. You can read them. I just picked out this one because carers, that's a thing that we don't seem to be handling very well in this country at all. And we've had a number of carers on the programme over the years. Anyway, this one, in caps, in the time capsule. Hello from 2022. I'm a lone parent carer to my profoundly disabled 17-year-old son, who is now palliative. I had to give up my career to care for him and go on welfare. I didn't want this. In 2022 in Ireland, disability services are very, very poor. There are waiting lists years long for basic care, testing, respite, and even medical care. Support for carers like me is equally poor. I will be 57 this year. No savings, no pension, a lost career. The government doesn't help us as we need. So many of us suffer. I hope 100 years from now that it's far better. Love from that person. We had somebody in, and it seems to me straightforward. This is 2-3 years ago, and they spoke about how it's done in America. And people like this person here, who are full-time carers for loved ones, they go and do a course and they become professional carers and are paid, which makes complete sense. And of course, it's been outlined over and over again, the millions, maybe billions of euro that the carers all over the country are saving the state by doing what they do, and yet they're not recognised properly. Anyway, that's there. So how did you get on with it last night? Did it feel like a bit of homework? Somebody else said that like it felt like homework doing the time capsule thing. We left ours because we couldn't decide, so we're going to come back to it this evening. Everyone was sent away to think about it and come back this evening. Well, in years to come, this is going to affect the census in years to come, because there's been a bit of a baby boom. Well, at least a hint of a baby boom, they're saying on independent.ie. Births in Ireland rose by more than 3,000 after being in decline for more than a decade. And this is the first increase in births since 2009. So HSE figures show 59,874 babies were born in maternity hospitals and units across the country in 2021. And that was up from 56,858 in 2020. So, yeah, it's the first time since there's been an increase since 2009. And Joe Murphy Lawless of NUI Galway said the response to deaths during the worst of the pandemic could have released a new generosity and appreciation of living a new life. Interesting theory. Joe is quoted as saying, "People lined the routes at funerals and wept. There is no way that people could not be affected by this. I think a generous impulse and a generosity around life has come out of it." And there are instances in history where a similar phenomenon happened, and after the famine, while there were low rates of marriage, the number of children born in families overall increased. That's interesting. It'd be interesting to see what the birth figures for 2021 are. 51551 ray@rte.ie. John has been on to ray@rte.ie. I know this is more Ronan Collins territory, but I'm hoping you would make an exception to wish my sister a happy 50th birthday. Fiona lives in England for almost 30 years, but came home to Cork this weekend to celebrate with all of us in Killarney. She listens to your show religiously every day in England. Please send her all our love on her birthday from Mum and all the boys. Happy birthday, Fiona. It's great to have you home. And we had a fab weekend in Killarney. And that's from John Toomey and all the family. So happy birthday, Fiona. I don't know if you're a Toomey or you've changed your name or whatever, but you know who you are. You're celebrating the 50th birthday, probably back in the UK now. This is the thing you're going to be hearing about, lads. Fads. And if you're looking for a fad, TikTok is the place to go. It's a simple game, but you're going to be doing it, particularly if you go on holidays this year. It's the water pouring game. No investment, and anybody can play it. So there's a glass placed on a table. All the participants gather around with another glass, or maybe they all have glasses, depending on how you play it. And then it's very simple. It's like water Jenga, but in reverse. So, or like Buckaroo, but with water. So each person just puts a drop of water in, and it goes round and round and round. And the first person whose water tips the water over the edge of the glass loses. And if you buy a swimming pool, they have to jump in. So it's the water pouring game. It's all the rage on TikTok. You're saying, what's that? I'll never be playing that. Mark my words, before the end of the year, you will have participated in a water pouring game. Now, what are you saying on the time capsule? Fiona here, Dermot's mum, We let the kids write a few sentences in the time capsule section of the census. Dermot wrote down, "He's on your programme," and told them to have a listen. Right. This is Dermot from our opening jingle. That's great.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. I wonder, will your descendants in years to come be going back through the archives, the audio archives, and listen to you as a boy introducing the radio programme on RTE Radio 1. I use the census time capsule to warn Generation 21-22 the need to deliver legal rights, which are lacking in 2022, for disabled and vulnerable people. You would hope that it'll be sorted out by then. But you know, nothing's guaranteed. I outlined the fact that there are no public transport where I live. This was the same in the last census. So what changes? Absolutely nothing. And no matter how many years pass, also no jobs here in the West, says Monica in Mayo. Yeah, it's a difficult one because what will they be interested in reading in 100 years' time? And is it all about our ego and what we think they will want to read as opposed to what they really will want to read? I saw people drew pictures of their dogs and put little paw prints on it, and there's loads of different things happening there on that. So people had a good bit of fun with it last night. Filled in the census this morning for the time capsule, I wrote a song about my life. What a lovely idea. What a lovely idea. Somebody might happen upon that in years to come, one of your descendants with a guitar, and they could have a hit. They could have a hit on their hands. Now, I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, we mentioned this on Friday. It's the new single from Harry Styles. Let me know what you think. There's a little voice at the beginning. So, shh, so we can hear it. Hello.
Come on, Harry. We want to say goodnight to you.
The new one from Harry Styles, As It Was, influenced by, I'd say, The Weeknd, Blinding Lights, that was influenced by A-ha's Take On Me. And there's a bit of Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire, but his fans don't care. It's Harry Styles and it sounds good. As It Was, an RTÉ Radio 1. Still on music, be careful what you wish for. Somebody should have said that to Simon Hattonstone. He's a journalist with The Guardian and he got very excited at the prospect of interviewing Shane McGowan. He's the first UK journalist to get an interview with Shane in a long time. And it's in the paper today, but it's a very entertaining read. It's a very entertaining read. At one stage, Shane is there with Victoria Mary Clark, who's his partner, on and off partner for a long time, 35 years, I think it says in the interview. And she says to Shane McGowan, "Shane, you're looking at him," this is Simon, the journalist, "as if he's here to kill you or torture you, but he's not. He's here because he's interested and he's trying his best. Come on, you're not making it easy." So the journalist says to Shane McGowan from the Pogues, "Do you hate talking in general or just interviews?" And he says, "Just interviews." The poor man, but it's his description of it. He gets 3 pages out of it, despite a lot of monosyllabic responses from Shane McGowan. The happy thing is that Shane McGowan, despite his few words, sounds like he's as sharp as ever, and it's there in the Guardian today. I better tell you about our quiz, reeling in the ears quiz. Right there you go. Yes. Yep. Thank you. Yep. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a great prize. Yes, we're giving one lucky listener a chance to win a 2-night stay with dinner on one evening at the Kilkenny Hibernian Hotel. The Kilkenny Hibernian Hotel is in the heart of Kilkenny City, bringing together a beautifully restored building just footsteps away from Kilkenny's main attractions and some chic contemporary additions to create a cosy and vibrant hotel full of character. There you have it. You and your guests will enjoy a 2-night stay in one of the newly renovated bedrooms, breakfast each morning and a delicious meal on one of the evenings in the stylish brasserie. You can find out more at KilkennyHibernianHotel.com. KilkennyHibernianHotel.com. So, 2 people after 4 o'clock, here is your qualifying question. What was the all-important document that needed to be filled in last night? What was the all-important document that needed to be filled in last night? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Mary in Kildare has been on. Read the time capsule. Have to say there's so much existential gloom around these times, especially with the horrors in Ukraine over the weekend, looming climate crisis and COVID still everywhere. That's all I could write about. Hopefully the world in 100 years will be a steadier place than now, says Mary in Kildare. And that picture that's on the cover of all the papers today is going to become one of those sadly iconic photographs. The lady walking through the streets of Bucha, which is 35 kilometres north of Kiev. And to her left, there are charred trees. The road which she's walking on is covered in black, wet ash. And to her right are blown out military vehicles, including a tank. And it looks like a personnel carrier, and it looks like a car there. And it's just so horribly bleak and desolate and destructive and violent and horrible. And so many people, when they see photographs like that, they want to act, they want to do something. Well, a group of lads from Wicklow have been doing their bit over the last while. We're joined on the line by Joe Morrison now, who's out on the Polish and Ukrainian border with two friends, Philip Flynn and Richie Murray. How are you doing, Joe?
Hey, well, Ray, yeah, I think it's the first time I've been on the radio using my own voice now, but
I should tell them, Joe, just so they know that you and I go way back, and you were Socky's minder, for want of a better way of putting
that's
it,
right,
back
Ray.
In the day.
That's
yes,
right,
yes.
Yeah.
So yourself and the lads are out in Poland stroke Ukraine, and are you the second shift or the third shift?
That's why we're the third shift now. It's kind of done in relay teams with a bit of an overlap. Sometimes there might be six of us here and two vans, but I'll explain how it happened in the first place. Mm. Like us all, absolutely appalled, sitting down, watching the news there a few weeks ago, the 6-1 news, and a WhatsApp group, a WhatsApp came in from pals at work explaining they were heading to Poland, renting a van, and whilst they were here, and you know, getting involved in humanitarian aid delivery, a bit like Tesco click and collect, really, whatever the needs be, that need would be serviced. Mm. I flew over to Krakow here in Poland last Wednesday on the 30th, on day six now, and we've kind of got into a bit of a routine.
Now, before you go on, Joe, just because initially you decided to do it differently than other people, because I was reading there over the weekend, for example, that Luke O'Neill and his mates got into a van and drove, and you're doing it a little bit differently.
Yeah, that's it. There's a cost involved in getting the van, driving a van from Ireland, filling it up with stock and getting here, which is still a great thing to do. It's an alternative way of doing it. But the approach that we took was, we'll hire our van over here, which is reasonably cheap to do, and we can fill it with goods that are needed in the moment. So, for example, we visited a refugee centre 2 days ago, and the washing was piling up. They were short a dryer. So we went out and we bought a dryer, so at least it can speed up the drying of the clothes. Mm.
What are you doing right now, as opposed
I'm in Sheshov at the moment, in our hostel, I suppose you'd call it. I was just finished sorting out a load of power banks and leads. So the power banks for mobile phones, which are really valuable for Ukrainian refugees coming over the border and in the their accommodation themselves before they decide where they're going to go in the world. At least they can. Basically, the chargers in the places is plug extension flex, extension flex, extension flex. A load of phones plugged in, trying to charge them up before they go on their journey in the trains, the buses, their planes. This way, they have a battery pack which charges their phone as a backup, you know. And also, like when we were delivering the battery packs, well, look, do you have any headphones? I go, okay, we hadn't thought of that. Let's go out and get a load of headphones.
Right. So you're on the ground and fulfilling the need as you see it. So tell us about your average day then.
So the average day, up nice and early and on the road by 8 o'clock. We're based 120 kilometres away from the border of Medyka, the Ukrainian-Polish border. And the reason for that, strategic really, it means we're not taking up vital accommodation that's needed closer to the border. And it also means that supplies are running, as you know, running low around the border area. Where we're based, we can go to the wholesalers in the morning. Today we picked up about 750 euro worth of canned meat. You can hear the sirens in the background. There's jets overhead now as well, and there's tanks going by on trailers, or tank carriers, I suppose you call them, that type of thing. We'd go into the wholesalers, which is on our way to our final destination of the day, which is usually the border checkpoint. But before I get to that, yeah, we'd fill up a pallet of cans of meat, maybe several very large bags of pasta. Then we might stop off in a the likes of Deals and buy bubbles and colouring books and markers for the kids. And then we hit the medical supply store, then spend about 2,000 a day on our medical supplies. Between the three of us coming over, we raised 20,000. That's what we had to do. We had to pay for all accommodation, flights, our own expenses, and everything that people donated to us through Revolut is going directly into the tills in Poland
You get down to the border crossing, what do you do? Do you set up some sort of stand or something?
Yeah, well, what on the way to the border crossing, we drop off our cans of meat and our vital medical supplies for the front line to the aid distribution centre, which is manned by volunteers. And there's a huge amount of logistics and what goes where and all that. And there could be three trucks coming in at the time you're waiting for the trucks to unload. Then you unload yourself. There's forklifts, very professionally done, you know. After that, we head to the border. We set up our stand. And at the border, it's a pedestrian border. I suppose you could call it a lane, which our pathway, which is about, it's under a kilometre long, I suppose. And it leads from the Ukraine-Polish border, if you like, checkpoint to the bus depot where the Ukrainian refugees get on. So once they come over the border, they're met by medics, and they're met by, if you have a dog, your dog will be catered for. There's people there especially to look after your pets. There's a women and children only area. There's people from Turkey, Israel, all along the road. For all intensive purposes, if you didn't know better, if you're flying overhead and you'd look down, you'd think there was a festival on. But there's no bands, because there's flags everywhere, tents everywhere, lining both sides of the street, and everyone is doing their bit to make the arrival of the Ukrainian refugees as comfortable as possible.
So Joe, when people arrive at your stand, what are they greeted by?
Well, I'll tell you, we're are right beside, just like the Ukrainian people arriving in Dublin Airport, you're getting your SIM card. So beside us, there's a tent giving out SIM cards. So people were going in and their phones are dead and the SIM card, and they couldn't get them organised because there's no way, they did no charge on their phones after their long travels. So power packs, we're going to need power packs for the phone. So we arranged a load of pre-charged power packs so that people come out of their tents or out of the SIM card tent, if you like, and up to us, and we get them kitted out with the correct leads, a USB charger, and headphones if they like, that type of thing. And then also, we would cater for the children passing by, so we'd have colouring pencils, colouring books, blowing bubbles, Kinder eggs, which are go down a treat, and just try and lift people as much as we can. Another thing, well, we'd say we have, we say we could get, we could pass on about 80 or so rucksacks a day, because the people coming over the border, they might left in a rush, they've, lots of plastic bags are getting holes in them. So we have our rucksacks, and someone arrived, they were setting up a new stall. Hey, is there anything we can do? We said, well, look, we don't have room to store suitcases. Do you want to get a few suitcases in, because people need them? We said, yeah. So next day, that charity arranged a ton of suitcases, type of thing. Yeah. But
and Joe, just kind of
a sad story, and just to warn people, if
go on. Is it what you expected?
A sad story for you, Ray.
Oh, sorry,
just
go on,
to warn
go on.
People.
Yeah.
Well, you know what it is. I'll just tell you now, it was a 65-year-old lady, and she had her helper with her, who was helping her down the road to the bus from the border. She was stopping off at our little stand, and we had it dressed with the Ukrainian flag. And we were all out of our bags, and our volunteer helper asked if this lady could have a bag. And I said, well, look, we've only one, and that's all our phone charges, everything's in that. And he said, is it okay if this lady has a bag? And okay, so we got the message. He asked us politely, but in other words, this lady looked in shock. She looked distraught. Okay, so we emptied out the bag and gave her a bag, and it was a bag with a big Irish flag on it. So she made the comment that you're flying my flag, the Ukrainian flag, I'll fly yours, you know, the flag on the back of the bag.
Yeah.
And she walked on, the volunteer pop back a few minutes later to say that lady had her sister shot through the head as she was standing beside her, and her sister's daughter shot in the head, her niece, right beside her. And suppose that answer your question. What are you gonna see, or how do you think it's gonna be? How is it different from what I expected? It's just very different to see something that's not on a screen in front of you, to see that it's the eyes of the person right in front of you, and it's pretty upsetting. And it'd be like that for the three of us. We're all dads, the three volunteers that came over. Philip and Richie and myself, you know, we're all, and you see, people are just incredibly distraught as they come across the border. People are exhausted. Some people are heading back to Ukraine, hoping that it's safe as well. There's two-way traffic. So we're there to help in every way. So say, for example, there's two mums pushing a buggy each with a giant suitcase. We have three at the table, so two of us hop on one case each, and we'll carry it, which is uphill from our table to the border checkpoint.
Right, okay.
That's the type of thing.
And have you been across the border in Ukraine, Joe?
Yeah, we made one trip across. It was a very, very wet day, and we got we picked up a load of ponchos, those disposable plastic ponchos, rain ponchos, you know. And we crossed the border. It takes about 20 minutes or so, and we handed out, I don't know, maybe 100 of those, and refreshments, and even though there's other people helping on the other side as well, but it's just not everyone can be catered for. And then on the way back, say, for example, through the border on the Ukraine side, there was a family with a mum, a dad, and a young child. And the young child, I'd say, was probably about six and was really, really upset. And Richie swooped in with the Kinder egg and checked with the parents first, gave it to the kid, and the kid like looked up and a big smile. Little stuff like that makes a huge difference. And we copped on that obviously the dad was heading back to war, and he was leaving his wife and small child to, you know, for how long, I don't know. Yeah. You know, and hopefully he's safe and hopefully they're safe. And
I was talking about the photograph on the front of the papers here, Joe. I'd imagine that has gone around on WhatsApp groups and everything, and on whatever wherever people get their news over there.
Yeah, it has actually, because we have a connection here to Ukrainian network, I suppose you could say. Those images have been coming in for the few days previous for us. You know, on TikTok and whatever else, and I had seen some of the images. I do find them very disturbing, but I just stuck the blinkers on and kind of just not think about it too much. Just help out with my colleagues as much as I can, really, my friends.
Well, you're doing amazing work there, and we'll direct people towards your Facebook page. What's the name of the Facebook page? Ukraine Van Aid. Ukraine Van Aid.
Ukraine Van Aid with my name, Joe Morrison, afterwards.
Yeah.
And Ray, I might be not. You just tell me if it's not appropriate if I could give out my Revolut.
Probably
details,
not appropriate.
Like
it's not appropriate. They're shaking the head there.
That's okay.
If they're on the Facebook page,
fine.
Yeah, so Ukraine Van Aid. And you're doing amazing work yourself and the rest of the lads. And there was a moment there you were talking
and
about.
And Ray, another chap. Yep.
No, you go ahead.
Sorry, another chap, Graham Waters, is coming back again when we finish. And he has a Facebook page as well. He has very informative information on it as well. Graham Waters.
Okay.
From Bray. Yeah, it's good to look him up as well.
Mind yourself, Joe. Stay safe. We'll talk when you get back. Okay, thanks, Joe. Yeah. Bye now. Bye.
Yeah,
bye.
thanks very much, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, that's mad. Saki doing his bit for the humanitarian effort in Ukraine. Joe Morrison. Now, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Maria McGrain. Maria is from Sheriff Street in Dublin, and she grew up in a sweet shop. Living the dream. Her parents ran Matty's of Sheriff Street from the 1950s to the 1970s, Noel and Carmel. And recently, Maria went back to Sheriff Street to photograph the people from there. And her photos are now part of a major photographic exhibition. And Maria joins me in studio. Afternoon, Maria.
Good afternoon to you. And thank you very much for having me in.
Thanks for coming in. So much to talk about. The exhibition, the sweet shop, your parents, Sheriff Street, loads of things. So it's a big day today because the launch is on tonight, is it?
The launch is on tonight, absolutely.
How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. It's been a long journey. It's 4.5 years now in the making. So and COVID, of course, got in the way. So that slowed us down considerably. But I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. We're very lucky, you know, that we got funding and we got a lot of supports, and that's been terrific. And the community themselves have been terrific. They've come out. So the portraits are of adults now, and probably grandparents as well, who were children when they came into, like myself, who were children when they came into my father's sweet shop.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yep.
So let's start the sweet shop then and the history of it.
Oh, the history is really interesting because... my great-grandfather and his brother, two Kerry men called O'Shea, who came up when that area was reclaimed from the sea. It didn't exist, hence the fact that one of the streets is called Newfoundland. Uh-huh. And they came up because they were both carpenters, and there was a great job was available there because they built this church called Lawrence O'Toole's, and they were going to carve all the pews, which they did. And they stayed and they obviously got married. And somewhere along the way, they turned the bottom part of the house into a sweet shop. And that was passed down through the generations. At one stage, it belonged to my...
And one of them was called Matty. That's where the name came from.
That's where the name... That's what I'm getting to.
Oh,
so it's okay. My grandfather's brother was... his name was Matty, but he was also known as the deaf man because he was deaf. And so obviously that didn't go very well for quite some time. Then it went to somebody else who was a very generous woman. And if you came in for a shilling's worth of sweets offer, she gave you 2 shillings.
Right.
And her husband said, listen, we have to stop this now because you're not making any profit. And then my mother was in England. They met through being pen pals. And
herself and your dad. Yeah,
and they thought they were meeting somebody really exotic because she was asked, would she be a pen pal for this poor, lonely young man over in London? And sure, he was only from across the river in 22 E. Pierce House. They came home and they took over the shop, which was like an old curiosity style shop. And in 1965, then they demolished it and they rebuilt it as this beautifully architect designed shop with a storeroom and a four bedroomed house beside it.
So, still selling sweets.
Still selling sweets, but also they sold lots of other interesting things. I have here packets of blades,
right.
Wilkinson sword, penny bottles of castor oil, fountain pens for children,
yeah.
Fuses.
So soothers. You've gone through all the stuff, anything that was left. Where was this stored?
He kept all the notes. When he left, he obviously loved being a shopkeeper. He kept his money box. He has all the key. We found all the keys to the shop. We found 62 of these notes from all the mothers because the mothers absolutely loved him. Yeah. One of the locals told me that the thing was that they all thought he looked like Frank Sinatra. They thought he was gorgeous. So they used to come in and see him.
So, when did your dad stop working in the shop?
We left it somewhere between 1978 and 9, I think. I know that I had my 21st in the new house, but we didn't move. There was a kind of tough transition there because the collapse of the docks had already happened. And with that economic collapse, there came a psychological collapse. So it meant that there was a kind of surge in antisocial behaviour, which is always a consequence, I think, of an economic collapse.
We'll take a little tangent then.
Yeah.
So the docks was there and used to service all the ships coming in, and
that's
they used
right.
to be loaded manually.
Correct.
And then it was sort of automated with ship containers and all that. And as a result, loads of people lost their jobs.
Well, it went from almost overnight, 20,000 people worked on the docks. So it took, I think, a lot of men to, my grandfather, three of my uncles were dockers, they would empty it manually.
Yes.
But when they made the decision to go into containerized shipping, it meant that they only needed two men or four men to
operate
unload
the crane,
a ship,
yeah.
operate the crane. And also the ancillary services didn't need to be beside the docklands. And because of that, and because they could move the goods on wheels on the back of lorries, they all pulled out. And when they all pulled out, it devastated the area. So overnight, almost within weeks, the entire economy was collapsed.
Around Sheriff Street,
yeah. on the Docklands.
So your dad pulled out sometime in the 70s, but he kept all these mementos of the shop. You brought in a lovely little plastic box full of notes. And I remember this going down, and that actually looks like my mum's writing, but it's not. So you'd be going out to the shop as a kid. Unless I came up to Sheriff Street from Kildare.
Or she was going on the Liverpool boat. Because,
maybe. So you'd get a note from your mother and you'd bring it down, you'd hand it in to your dad, Noel.
That's right, yeah.
And he'd give you. So I'm looking at them. You have your favourites. I'm looking at a lot of sweets. There's one bottle of Sidona, small. One packet of Spud. That'd be Spud's crisps, I say?
I think crisps, yeah.
Yeah, and a quarter Scotch Clans.
Oh, Scotch Clans were lovely.
Yes, they were the toffee covered in chocolate.
That's right, yeah.
And they would have been sold loose, would they?
All of our sweets, except for boxes of chocolates, they were all sold loose and we all had to weigh them and we all had to work there. So I was very lucky that I managed to track down the loan of one of the sweet shops that was made specifically for sweet shops in 1965. And I managed to track down from a chap called Michael Duffy in Parnell Street. He's an antique dealer.
Right.
And he's given me a loan of it. And it adds, I think, to the art, because we've done a mock-up shop in the middle of it. And I've managed to get all these big jars of sweets.
It's in the CHQ building.
Yeah.
The Riverloom CHQ building.
Yeah.
And it's starting tonight and it's on till April 9th. Here's another one here. There was a lot of shampoo bought, but they were very specific. Super soft shampoo for greasy hair.
Yes.
Four ice pops, one packet of Twix, or if you haven't, Mars Bar will do. That's that one. And then there's another one, Sun Silk shampoo for normal hair. Says that one. These are great. I love these. Four Pepsi, four Crunchies. I can't. One something pop. Paper Hanks, that's paper handkerchiefs, I suppose.
Yes, that is, yeah.
10 number six players and 10 Rotmans.
Yeah.
There's the getting the ciggies in. And 10 number six. Sun Silk shampoo for normal hair.
They were obviously going out evening, yeah. And some he also sold the shampoo in sachets, so they didn't have to buy a whole bottle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know. One pair of shoelaces, black. There you go. Two boxes zinc boric starch.
No, zinc boric and starch.
Sorry.
It was for babies, starch, right. For nappies. And he sold a lot of that kind of stuff that you'd need for ordinary everyday life.
Two Viz. What are Viz?
Bars, I think. Viz bars.
2p packet of sweets, please. Thank you very much. One. There's more. It's all the shampoo. One Sun Silk shampoo. Normal hair this time. not greasy hair.
They were going up to Talbot Street and O'Connell Street. And they call that uptown. We all call that. We're going uptown.
Yeah.
So sometimes you'd go uptown to get your messages, but mostly you'd get them locally.
And you brought in, that's castor oil there. And
Penny bottle
of castor oil. You have blades, as you said. And they're the old...
fountain pens.
Yeah, nearly disposable fountain pens, aren't they? In that, you know...
Yeah. Well, if the nib broke, you see, they slide out. Because if the nib broke, you'd be able to buy just the nib and you'd replace it, and then you'd dip it into the inkwell in your desk.
What was it like as a child growing up in a sweet shop? Because, as I said, it does sound idyllic. It's the dream, isn't it?
It was the dream, yeah. And my father was very generous. And so he, even when I was a young adult and I was working in the civil service, before I trained and became a group analyst and a child and adolescent psychotherapist, I'd be heading out at lunchtime to walk back to the Department of Agriculture. And he'd say, help yourself to anything you like. And I was like, oh, it's OK, I've just had my dinner. No. Have something. Take whatever you want. And I had that lovely sensation. So the opposite of that did happen. I would eat all the chocolate barrels in the Cadbury's throwouts, they were called. They were the sweets that were kind of slightly second. And I remember the customers would come in and complain that the Cadbury's don't seem to be making those chocolate barrels. And he'd look at me over their shoulders and glare at me. Because I ate the whole lot out of the box.
A couple of things. You don't sound like you're from Sherry Street.
No. interestingly, when I was 10 years old, my mother tried to get me into a private school. And the first private school turned me down because of where I came from. And the second school, which is now where the Westbury stands, was my school that was the Holy Faith in Clarendon Street.
Right. So when you were growing up, having an address in Sherriff Street was a no-no.
It was a dreadful thing. By the time I was 16, my mother was asking the local priest, could we use that address? And I remember at one stage standing on Seville Place, which was full of bed and breakfast because the boat was at the end where the Samuel Beckett Bridge now is, where the boat pulled in. And so people would board the ship and go up to the upper deck, and the cattle would be loaded onto the bottom deck because cattle came up and down our street twice a week. So she realised that she thought that my accent would go against me. And so she paid 5 shillings a week for me to have elocution lessons, as well as paying for a private school.
I hear a bit of the Dublin coming through the odd time.
Yeah.
The way you say now.
Now. Wait till I tell you now.
But on a serious note, you were saying there that you're a psychotherapist and you do a lot around trauma.
Yes.
And you reckon, in your opinion, there's sort of community trauma around the area.
Yes, I do.
Go on.
I think that the collapse of the docks had a massive impact on people. And also, when you have a job, it becomes part of your identity. And if that's taken away from you, well, who are you to yourself and others? And I think people didn't realise that they were quite traumatised. And also, I think it is very traumatising to live in an area where you get related to as a social pariah. And there's a series of talks built in around the photography exhibition. And the one I'll be doing with Roisin Ingle is a talk on the impact of shame on marginalised communities.
Right.
And we know that it has an effect on the right side development of the brain. But we also know that we can, you know, because the brain has plasticity, we know that actually we can change these difficulties that people experience in their lives, and we can help them to overcome them. And I think with chronic shame and societal shame that we're talking about, I think it's really important that people are helped, that others can find empathy for their suffering, and also that they can be helped to find a ladder out of the intergenerational transmission of trauma and out of chronic and societal shame that helps them to move on in their lives. So I think that's generally been acknowledged. I think a lot of people down there know that the collapse of the docks was something horrendous.
And the people who you feature in your exhibition, they're portraits of people and couples and all that. And they've lived there all their lives.
They have lived there all their lives. Some of them have moved away. The one thing that's very striking is, and it's in my memory, is the sense of community that I lived within. So even though people wouldn't have much, you know, because maybe a lot of the fathers were away, they might have been at sea, the check wouldn't have come on time, the children might be hungry. And so the mother next door, who wouldn't have much, would actually take those children in and the woman and feed them. So because it was highly industrialised, there was also a lot of traumas that happened. There was men, and there was no health and safety. Men were killed on the docks, children were drowned in the canal. But everybody would pull together. Right. And I think they're a kind of, they're an example of exactly what can happen. We can be overwhelmed by trauma, and we can be devastated. But if we have a community where we're loved and supported and we're helped, we can get through it. And one woman came to us, and she was only 6 days over heart surgery. And she came with a little picture of her brother, Bill, who had drowned in the dock. And I was there the day he drowned. And but her father had died a few months before, and the mother realised she was pregnant. And women didn't run down there, and I saw them all running. And my mother shouted, "What's wrong?" And they said, "There's a boy gone into the canal." So we all ran in the same direction. And it was her brother, and she said, "I just want him remembered."
Oh.
So we've got a little memorial in the portfolio to him, beside her photograph, because we couldn't fit everybody on the wall, because I think I did over 70, myself and Linda did over 70 portraits. So some of them are in the portfolio. We've also recorded them, so we've taken a multimedia approach. I like that. It makes me sound very technical, and I'm very proud of that.
This is a great community event, isn't it?
It's a huge community event. And a woman phoned me last night, one of the participants, and she said, because I was saying to her, "You're the VIP of the evening." She said, "No, you are, because you've brought us all back together again." Because the whole community really, after the collapse of the dock, scattered. Now, the other thing I want to say is, what's very clear to me is the sense of community still exists. And anybody who left took it with them. And the people who are there, it lives on in them. Because actually, it's not a place and it's not a building. It's the soul.
People, yeah.
It's the soul of the people.
Okay, yeah.
And they are that. And they're funny and witty. And they're all kinds of things. They're extraordinary.
The Pride of Place photography exhibition, it's at the River Room in CHQ building from tonight onwards. Good luck with the launch, Maria, and thanks so much for coming in. Thank you so much, Ray.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 or ray@rte.ie. Just to get back on the time capsules, people have been sharing what they included in their census form last night on page 23. I apologise to future generations for the destruction of the world because of our failure to protect it. I wish you could see it now, I said. It's so beautiful. Sorry, that's Simon there. And I include in the time capsule that Waterford senior hurlers won the league title on Saturday night, and our hope that they may go on to lift the Liam McCarthy trophy this summer. Go on the Daisha! Ending the long, long wait for the Daisha. That's Bernie, last one in 1959. I said I was passionate about books, motorcycles and plants. That's Linda in Dublin 12. Always be passionate about something and be kind. Good advice. And on Joe Morrison, a.k.a. Saki, your guest, Ray, has just such a comprehensive overview of the whole situation. Well done, Joe and colleagues. Excellent, says Anya. And great listen to Maria. My grandparents had a butcher shop in Sheriff Street. Their name was Hederman. My mother Elizabeth was born there, along with her sisters Joan and Nora and brother Peter. I think it closed in the late 50s, so they must have known these people. That's Robert Boyd from Artane. And Rock the Machine by Lisa O'Neill remembers the dockers who lost their jobs to Progress. Oh, we must look that up. And there's still an old school sweet shop in Ennis, County Clare, called Tierney's. Loose sweeties in the paper bag. Old to be young again, says Dave. And my dad used to send me to the local shop in Whitehall every Saturday for a quarter of satin cushions. Remember satin cushions? And a quarter of buttered japs. I don't know what buttered japs are, Margaret Max Day. Just before Maria left there, we were remembering all the various sweets. Bullseyes and clove rocks. And wasn't there a fruit salad thing that you used to get? And that was the other one. Apple drops. All of them, yeah. I never heard of buttered japs. I wonder what they are. A quarter of buttered japs, please. Right, it's time for reeling in the ears. Okay, yep. We've two quizzers waiting to answer three questions each on clips they will hear in their ears, thus the name Reeling in the Ears. And there is a prize. And this week we've a two-night stay for two people in the Kilkenny Hibernian Hotel. It's in the heart of Kilkenny City, bringing together a beautifully restored building just footsteps away from Kilkenny's main attractions. And so it's a two-night stay, breakfast on both mornings, then one evening you can eat in style in the brasserie. KilkennyHibernianHotel.com for more information. KilkennyHibernianHotel.com. I was reading the list of the 100 best restaurants in the country yesterday, and Kilkenny kept coming up, so there's loads of lovely places to eat down there as well on the other night. Okay. Hello, Susan Furtair from...
Hello, Ray.
Gortadoo, County Kerry. Where is Gortadoo when it's at home?
Well, it's west of Ballyferter. I'm actually close from Ballyferter myself, but I'm here. And when I heard your question coming up, what did everybody have to complete last night? I said I had to ring in because I'm the census enumerator for the area.
Congratulations. And that's out in the Dingle Peninsula.
That's right, yeah. West Kerry.
So you have to do a good bit of mileage, do you? A good bit of mileage to reach few people. Is that the way it is out there?
Actually, it's fairly compact, the area I have to cover now. I'm here looking out at beautiful Smerwick Harbour at the moment. It's a bit grey, but it's still beautiful.
It's always beautiful down there. Always, even when you can see nothing, it's beautiful. I remember my best drink ever was down in Dunquin in the Krugers.
Oh yeah, Krugers.
And I just ran out from Tralee with a guy called Ken. So that's 13 miles out from Tralee, and we stood there, and it was a beautiful summer's day, and we were looking out into the Atlantic Ocean with a pint, and I said, it doesn't get much better than this. So that's that. So tell me now what happens as a census enumerator. Last night was the big night. So the real work, I suppose, begins now, or is the real work done?
Well, the main work of delivering the forms, that's all done.
Yes.
And what I'm doing today is checking houses that were supposed to be empty on census night, that they're still empty. And we'll then be going around and we'll be collecting, going to each of the householders at the door and collecting the forms from them and scanning them in. There's a barcode on each form, and they've already been scanned in at delivery. We're scanning them in and making sure the forms are filled out properly and signed at the back. Yeah, and we've got about 2 or 3 weeks to do that.
And have you done it before, Susan?
No, that's my first
time. Oh, right, brilliant. You've nothing to compare it to.
Nothing at all, no.
Yeah.
No.
And did you enjoy it?
I actually did, because this is my own stamping ground, so to speak, and most people were delighted to see me.
How are you, Susan? How are you, Susan? Come to talk to.
Irish I went in for a cup of tea to every house I was invited in. I wouldn't have got half the houses done, so it was great. And the weather wasn't too bad either, Rave. There was a few miserable days, but it cooperated most of the time, so it was great.
There'll be a thing now called the enumerator stone. Do you know the way they were talking about a COVID stone, and there was a Google stone back in the day that they used to put on weight because all the food was free. So you going around being offered cups of tea and scones. You're up against James English. How are you doing, James?
I'm good, Ray, and yourself?
Good. You're in Ballylooby in South Tip. It's Gortadoo takes on Ballylooby. I love Ireland.
How are you, James?
What do you do in Ballylooby, James?
I'm a tillage farmer, right?
Right, and is this a busy time of the year or what?
Yeah, we just finished up setting our spring corn there today, and now it is all fertiliser and spraying from here on, like, you know.
Right, okay. And you have a busy house at home. You would have been busy last night with the census form.
Yeah, we're busy enough. Sinead looked after that end of things. She was firing questions at me. I was listening away at times.
How many acres have we got? Don't tell them. They don't need to know.
How many cows have the dairy farmer?
That's one of the questions, Ray. How many acres or how many hectares? That's been one of the questions if you're a full-time farmer.
Is it one of the questions? I hope you answered honestly now, James.
I did.
Yeah, of course you did. So there's Sarah, Clara, John and Jimmy from 18 down to 13.
That's it,
So you must have some exam doers this year then in that lot.
Yeah, Sarah's doing her leaving cert and Clara's in fifth chair. Yes. John's in Junie's junior cert, okay. And Jimmy is in first year, yeah.
So you have two exams, a bit of tension.
Yeah, two exams, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay, how are you on the quizzes, James?
I'm brilliant up to now. Like, you know, I could answer every question last week.
Of course you could, yeah. Okay, so I don't know if you've ever met in a hurling match or a football match or a badminton game, but it's Gurtadu takes on Ballylooby. Susan versus James. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Thanks.
Yeah, okay.
Best luck, Susan.
Yeah. So three clips each, and you know the deal. A long clip will get you a point. A short clip will get you 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end wins the prize. If it's a draw on points, we go to a tie-break question. Susan, to you first. The year is 1994, and we start at the movies. So do you want to go long or short?
I'll go long, please, Ray.
Go long, okay. Widely considered one of the best movies ever made, this 1994 cinema masterpiece stars Tim Robbins and Andy Dufresne. And features narration from a Hollywood legend. Can you name the movie? Here's your long clip for 1 point.
Like I said, in prison, a man will do most anything to keep his mind occupied. Turns out, Andy's favorite hobby was toting his wall out into the exercise yard. A handful at a time.
Now, can you name that movie from 1994?
Is that The Green Mile?
No, it's the other one.
Oh, shite.
No, not shite. Shawshank Redemption. You got the first two letters right. And that was Morgan Freeman there. Shush. Okay, James, to you then. It's still 1994, still in the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
I'll definitely go long.
Go on. Okay. 1994 comedy classic stars Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels as two buffoons who take a road trip across America to return a suitcase. Here's your long clip for 1 point.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Guys! Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio or something?
Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber is correct, yes.
Yeah.
Mad statistics about that. It was made for 17 million and it grossed 247 million.
Right.
And it made Jim Carrey a household name. So you get a point. That's all you care, really. Okay, yeah. So it's 1 point for James. Not on the scoreboard yet, Susan, but we're into question two for you. It's music. Do you want to go short or long from 1994?
I'll go short, Ray.
You go short on this one. Okay.
Yeah.
Which Danish performer ended Wet Wet Wet's 15-week run at the top of the charts with her Eurodance anthem? Here is your short clip.
It's party time and not 1 minute we can lose.
So the name of the song or the name of the singer?
Is that Rihanna, no?
No. Oh. It's Saturday Night, Wakefield. I don't think Rihanna was even born in 1994.
I knew the tune, but I didn't know the
okay,
name.
Okay. Stay with us, Susan. Stay with us. Okay, James. An opportunity for you, James. 1994 music, short or long?
I go long.
Long again, playing the safe game. Released as the second single from their debut album, which boy band got to number 2 in the UK charts with this 1994 single? Again, the name of the band or the name of the song. Here's your long clip for a point.
Boyzone.
Boyzone is the correct answer. You get a point.
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting. Susan, you're not on the scoreboard yet, but all is not lost. Because if you go short and get 2 points, and James doesn't get anything out of his final question, then we're into a tiebreak situation.
Yes. So I have to go short, basically.
Basically, that's it. Yes, you got it. Okay. Right. So it's news and current affairs from 1994. Heralding in the formation of the Rainbow Coalition between Fine Gael, Labour and the Democratic Left, who was appointed as Taoiseach in December of 1994? Here's your short clip.
I wish to thank this House for nominating me as Taoiseach.
So who's that?
Is that John Bruton?
It is John Bruton. You get 2 points.
That's great.
You're in the game, back in the game. Gurtadu, we're back in the game. What can Ballylooby do now?
Gurtadu slash Ballyfurter.
Right. James English has the ball. Right, James. It's you've 2 points. So anything from this will
we go along. So
you go along
we'll
again.
Go along,
yeah. Why change the habit of the last 10 minutes? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's news and current affairs. The Minister for the Arts, Michael D. Higgins, speaks here about securing Ireland as the 1994 shooting location for what film epic directed by Mel Gibson? And here is your long clip.
From the initial discussions, it became clear to me that the value to the Irish economy is about $30 million, but £10.5 million in direct expenditure on employment and services.
So Michael D. Higgins talking about which movie?
Braveheart.
It is Braveheart. Get you a point.
Yeah.
Look at you. All right. All one-pointers. Played the safe game. Worked out for you.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Well done, James. Well done.
Yeah, thanks, Susan. Thank you.
Susan, well done. You know, you came good in the end. Bit of excitement there between Gertrude and Ballylooby. Susan, we're going to send you out a couple of mugs, and it was lovely talking to you, and good luck with the rest of your enumerating.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
See you now. Mind yourself. See you. Brilliant. Stay safe. Bye. That's Susan there. And James, well done. You are off to the Kilkenny Hibernian Hotel.
Oh God, Sinead will be delighted.
Yes, and you can enjoy yourself as well.
A
two night stay and a meal and one of the nights in the Brasserie, and you can find out what's in store for you and Sinead, KilkennyHibernianHotel.com. Talking to you, James.
Thanks very much.
See you now. Mind yourself. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Just on sweet shops there, there's a shop in Temple Bar in Dublin that sells all the old sweets like clove drops, chocolate pillows, apple drops, bullseyes, etc. They're sold in the big old-fashioned jars and by the quarter. That's a quarter pound, isn't it? It's like going back in time. It's great to go in and get sweets for all the family, especially the clove rocks, as we call them, for my mother, who always loved them. I'm a big fan of the clove rocks myself. Connor Pope is on the line. Connor, what's your favourite sweet from back in the day?
You know, they used to have these apple sours. They were kind of round.
Yes.
They were a bit like gobstoppers. They were round. I used to love them, and they would tear the roof off your mouth because you'd be sucking the bejesus out of them. And then your mouth would be in bits, but that wouldn't stop you eating them. You'd go back for more and more and more. And now I'm talking about when I was 10. Obviously, I have far more sense now and I wouldn't be going near them.
Of course. Now, you're writing in the Irish Times today about the new proposals from Heather Humphreys, Minister for Social Protection, about pensions for the 750,000 private sector workers over the age of 23, under the age of 60. It was announced last week, and you're making sense of it here for all of us.
Yeah, well, I think one of the aims of the Price Watch page in the Irish Times is to try and make complicated stories and stories that might turn people off more interesting and more accessible. And I've always taken that as one of the challenges I have.
Mm.
And you know what? Pensions are really important, and they're really important to all of us, because yet it's something that a lot of people, when they even hear the word pensions, they go, oh God, no, I don't even think about that. But it's a really big issue. And it's, you know, this is like, and I've been writing about pensions for years and years and years, but this is one of those rare good news stories, because the auto enrollment story, while it's not without its flaws, it will see employees getting a pension started. And it's really important when you're in your 20s to start a pension. I mean, I know some of your listeners in their 20s will obviously think they're immortal, and they'll think, sure, what would I ever need a pension for? But it makes such a huge difference when you start a pension, right? Now, for instance, if you start saving for a pension when you're in your 20s, and you want a private pension annually of around €20,000 a year, you'll need to put in around €300 gross a month to get that. So that's €150 after tax.
Okay.
Because you get a tax break. So it'll cost you €150 a month. But so it'll cost you about £150. If you start at 35, then you'll need to put in €500 a month.
Mm.
So that'll cost you around £250. And if you start at 45, you'll have to put in close to €1,000 a month. So that'll cost you
The good
you
news about this is, of course, you'll have no choice.
Exactly. Now, the way it works is the workers and their employees will both contribute 1.5% of the employee's salary to the pension pot. And then as a kind of a bonus, the government will add an initial €1 for every €3 invested by the worker, right? So, and that money is then invested until the employee reaches retirement age. And over a period of time, those contributions will climb gradually. So it starts off at 1.5%, and then it becomes 3%, and then it becomes 4.5%. And then after 10 years in the scheme, it becomes 6%. And then you're kind of sucking diesel, to use the phrase, because once you're putting 6% of your salary into a pension pot, it will start to make a difference. And the reality is that half of the Irish population are going to rely on the state pension. Now, the state pension is not going to be enough to keep an awful lot of people in this country in the manner to which they've become accustomed. And particularly if we're in a situation where an awful lot of people can't buy houses, so they have to rent houses. And if you're trying to continue renting when you're 65, 70, 75, a pension of 13 grand a year is not going to cover your rent, never mind your living expenses. So that's why it's important that this stuff is tackled, and it's tackled now. But it's not a bad, like, it's like, I know some people say, oh God, I can't afford to put in a pension, I can't afford to start a pension. And I'm like, if you talk to pension advisors,
but hold on,
like, you're really
but hold on, Connor, it doesn't matter what they say, they'll have to, it's mandatory, is it? That's my
understanding. But now you can opt out of it.
But what happens then after 2 years?
If you opt out of it, you get your chunk of the pension pot back, right? But you don't get the employer's contribution, and you don't get the state contribution. And then after another period of 2 years, you're re-enrolled in it.
And can you opt out again?
You can. I mean,
okay,
you can.
Okay, you keep opting out. Okay, I didn't understand that.
But the big question is that you don't. Right? Now, and just to give you another, and can I, because the numbers are staggering, right? Now, I spoke to a pension advisor, her name is Laura Doyle, and she just gave me the figures, right? So based on a salary of 40 grand, it costs 100 euros a month to save 2,000 euro per annum when you factor in the tax relief. If a person pays in from the age of 25, they'll have a pension pot of 60 grand when they come to their mid-40s. And if they continue paying by the time they hit 70, they'll have a pension pot of 250,000 euros. If you started the pension at 45, by the time you hit 70, you're only going to have 87,000 euros. So that's a huge difference. And that's the kind of difference that will, that's the kind of gap that will make the difference between somebody, you know, living relatively comfortably into older age. And the reality is, of course, that we're all going to live much older than our parents or our parents' parents. And we do need to be able to look after ourselves, because, you know, we see...
Yeah, there's going to have to be rental subsidies for people once they retire as well.
Listen, we either can buy our houses or there's going to have to be rental subsidies, because you can't have a scenario whereby somebody is expected to pay 2,500 euros a month in rent, or 3,500 euros in rent.
Yeah.
And if they're only getting 2,000 euros in pension funds. That just would not make any sense. Yeah. So there's a lot of different questions still up in the air, but at least this is a starting point.
It's a start.
I think it should be acknowledged for that.
Yes, and it's proactive, and it makes people think, which is great, and because there's been an awful lot of talk over the years about pensions, and people have probably switched off already. Oh, they're talking about pensions again. But it'll be...
And not when they hear me and you chatting. they're probably turning the volume up on the radio.
Yes, okay, right. This came in to pricewatch.rte.ie. I hope you can give me some advice, Connor. I need to employ a painter to paint my house. I'm worried about a tradesperson getting injured and claiming damages against me. My question is, lots of painters have insurance, but is it the right insurance? What insurance is required so I'm completely covered? I've never thought of this before in my life.
And you're not alone, Ray, and I'm actually really glad we got this mail in, because I know we're talking about pensions and insurance, the two sexiest topics out there, you know, so we're really nailing it today. But you know what? This really highlights an issue that so many people overlook, and I've overlooked it myself, and you overlook it at your peril. Because builders and painters and almost anybody else in the construction and renovation trade right now are as rare as hen's teeth. They're really difficult to find. And then when you find them, they can be pricey. So it's very tempting for people to take shortcuts or to employ friends or friends of friends or random people who call to your door. So a bloke calls to your door and says, can I paint your house? And you get grand. And so they come in and they start painting the house. So the question then is, what happens if something goes wrong? Now, I don't mean if he makes a pig's ear of the paint job. I mean, what happens if you've got somebody in your house and they fall off the ladder while they're painting your ceiling? Who's liable? There's a really good chance it's you who's going to be liable. And of course, the bill for somebody falling off a ladder in your house might run to tens of thousands of euro, or indeed hundreds of thousands of euro in a worst case scenario, depending on the nature of the injuries they have and the litigious nature of the person. So then you think, okay, well, I'll be grand, my house insurance will cover it. So then I went and I looked at like a typical house insurance policy, and it probably won't cover it.
No,
because the terms and conditions of most standard insurance policies offered by the big providers will say, and this is a direct quote from one of them, no cover is provided for independent contractors. So if you've got somebody in your house doing work, they're an independent contractor, and that means that they're not your house insurance will not cover them. It'll cover somebody who comes into your house as a guest, if they fall over your rug and they break their leg, then they're covered. But if somebody, if you've employed someone to come into your house to do some job like painting, well, then they're not covered. So the first thing everybody has to do, and it's really awkward, one of the early questions you ask any kind of builder, contractor, painter, whatever it is do they have insurance? Right.
This is news to a lot of people, Connor. This is news to an awful lot of people, isn't it?
And then, as if that wasn't awkward enough, you then have to say, can I see proof of your insurance? Because it's not good enough for you to hear a builder or a contractor say, oh yeah, I'm grand, I'm insured. Like, you need to actually see it, right? And then what kind of insurance they need to have? They need employer's liability and public liability. So what are they? Okay, well, employer's liability insurance will cover them in case anyone working for the tradesman in your home is injured.
Okay.
And public liability insurance is in case any damage is caused or somebody else is injured as a result of the work. So imagine you've got a guy right roofing your house, putting tiles on your roof, and all of the tiles fall off the roof and hit your next door neighbour. You know, the public liability insurance will cover them in that instance.
Okay.
So that's the types of insurance that you need. And it is an awkward and uncomfortable question to ask, but it's only awkward and uncomfortable.
But if
the tradesperson...
Say if an electrician is a registered electrician or a plumber is registered with the plumbing organisation, does that mean they have to have insurance before they can be registered?
To be
in those
registered.
Yes.
So, you know, and most tradespeople, like this, I'm not talking about the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of decent, hardworking tradespeople out there. I'm talking about the rogue guy who just randomly rocks up to your house and says, I'll fix it for you.
Yeah.
So all the people who are properly, who've served their apprenticeships and have all their accreditations and have all their cards and have all their insurance, you'll be grand. And in fact, most builders and most tradespeople have that stuff. But you do have to check it just in case. And particularly if you've come at the job from a slightly unusual angle. So if you're getting somebody, as I say, a friend of a friend or a mate who's apparently really good with a paintbrush, you know, you just have to take care of it. Now, it's all worst case scenario stuff, but sure, isn't that how insurance is built? Insurance is built on protecting you against the worst case scenario. So, you know, most of the time you'll be grand. And I want to stress this, like most painters will have the insurance, so they're not going to be in the slightest bit embarrassed when you say, do you have your insurance? Because that's, you know, they have it.
Yeah.
It only becomes awkward or embarrassing if they're going, no, I don't. And then you've got to make a really important judgment. Do you employ the person without the insurance because they can do it quick and fast? I would argue that you don't. Or do you wait until somebody who is properly qualified, properly insured, who can do it properly and protect you against those worst case scenarios? And ultimately, it is all about those worst case scenarios.
Right. Can I tell people again, just the price of everything is on Thursday nights?
Yes, every Thursday night at 7 p.m.
The first
episode was last week. Second episode, strangely enough, is next Thursday.
Next Thursday, 7 o'clock with Conor Pope and...
Santos O'Gara. Lovely, yes. Santos O'Gara.
Right. If you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues, it's pricewatch@rte.ie, pricewatch@rte.ie. Just before we go, Ian in Mullingar was on, Conor. You were talking about sweets that are no longer available. I remember a bar of chocolate called 2 and 2. There was a dark chocolate on top and a light chocolate on the bottom with caramel filling. That was 1963. I've no memory of it. I wasn't born in it, but thank you for that.
Neither was I, Ray. Neither was I.
What was your favorite? There was one, I can't remember the name of it. It was a sort of a hard one. Anyway, Conor, thanks very much. PriceWatch@rte.ie.
Right, bye-bye.
That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.